6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Well, the Shannon Sharpe situation at ESPN continues to escalate, and now the First Take contributor says he's not going to be back on the air until the NFL preseason later this summer. And that's a topic we will lead off with on the new edition of the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Armand Brody. Please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. So let's start with the Shannon Sharpe story. You know, this broke Sunday. He was sued for sexual assault, the last several days have been kind of a bit of a back and forth, honestly, through the media between Sharpe and the representation for his accuser, which is led, of course, by Tony Busby, who people know Tony Busby and Rusty Harden as well, his opponent in that case from the Deshaun Watson situation. He's a obviously well-known lawyer. For the first few days of it, Shannon was remaining on ESPN on First Take, but things are continuing to escalate. You know, video and audio, all these things are being leaked, texts are being leaked, and when it comes down to it, it's not good for anyone. Certainly isn't good for ESPN. And so Shannon Sharpe will be taking really the next, I guess, 3 or so months off at least, assuming he even comes back. And this continues to get uglier for Shannon because Ryan Glasspiegel in Front Office Sports just reported Thursday afternoon that during his tenure at FS1, Shannon was accused of choking a female production assistant. Now, Shannon, or his representation, said in response to that, that it was some kind of joking, lighthearted physical encounter. But I don't know how many physical encounters end up with it looking like you're choking somebody. I mean, I can imagine a circumstance that would end up like that, but I can't imagine one where the person would feel so serious about it that they sued. You know what I mean? So to me, that's a tough one. And of course, Glasspiegel also pointed out something that I had clean forgotten, even though I wrote about it at the time, which is that Shannon was accused of sexual assault in 2010. While he was working for CBS and took a leave of absence then. Now, of course, you know, I mean, celebrities are accused with some regularity, and in circumstances where a celebrity is accused and it goes nowhere, people are going to forget. But when a celebrity is accused and it goes nowhere, and then they're accused again, that first accusation suddenly becomes part of a pattern rather than a one-off set of circumstances. So it's a dangerous point now in Shannon's public life. And remember where he was about a week ago trying to get, I think, a 9-figure contract for his Club Shay Shay podcast. So it has been an abrupt, you know, fall from grace, I guess you could put it, over this past week or so. And Armand, I'll bring you in on that note.
Well, there are many places we could go here, but there are only a few places that are relevant to what we do here on this podcast. There are other places that other people touch, other issues other people touch on that have nothing to do with what we'll do here on this pod. But I think the question really needs to be asked. There are so many different angles I see this situation from. Number one, the fact that Shannon himself released the statement acknowledging that this situation was going on and that he was going to step away. I found it interesting that at no time did ESPN, at least from any of the reporting that I have seen, at no time was it reported that ESPN was forcing Shannon to step away or was sitting Shannon down for a time. And so that piece of it was interesting to me because this has been going on, as you said, John, since the weekend. So ESPN had time, if it wanted to address this directly. There was a statement released by some reporters, Andrew Marchand, I saw of The Athletic. I saw him on Twitter releasing part of ESPN's statement, and it may have even been something ESPN PR released itself. But the statement essentially said that they agree with Shannon's decision to step away. But it's just an ugly mess. It is. And as you said, John, one time it becomes an incident, two times it becomes a pattern. And so I'm really wondering now, are we at a place? Is Shannon Sharpe at a place where he's like, how much damage is really what I'm asking? How much damage has Shannon done to his career? Because we have to look at this from the sports media angle. All the other stuff is just, it's not our lane. But how much damage does this do to Shannon's career? And what does this mean for ESPN? What does it mean for First Take? What does it mean for Stephen A. Smith? It is, in Shannon's viewpoint, it's optimistic to expect to be back during the summer, but that might not happen, John. There's a chance that this is the end of Shannon Sharpe's time at ESPN. Now, I don't know. I haven't seen anything, and I'll turn to you and ask you, have you seen anything relative to the podcast that he's looking for all this money for? I haven't seen anything there. It would be strange, but not beyond belief. It would be strange if Shannon kept doing the podcast, but not showing up on ESPN to do First Take. Not saying that that would not happen, but it would be a strange look.
Well, let's start with, you know, what does this mean for ESPN? ESPN, a couple of years ago, had Michael Irvin doing what Shannon Sharpe is doing now. The exact same thing. Showing up on Mondays and Tuesdays to debate Stephen A. Smith. Michael Irvin was accused of something that, compared to Shannon Sharpe, is very trivial, right? I mean, I'm not saying it's nothing, but compared to what Shannon's being accused of, inappropriate comments. And then he was gone. NFL Network took him off the air. ESPN never brought him back. And, you know, NFL Network then laid him off, which to me was something that I wouldn't necessarily say is completely unrelated. And again, that was for inappropriate comments. ESPN doesn't need Shannon Sharpe. Skip Bayless needed Shannon Sharpe. When Shannon left that show, it collapsed, right? You know, ESPN doesn't even have Shannon on every day. And we know Stephen A is a star. If Stephen A was being accused, then this would be a very different story for ESPN. They can live without Shannon. What does it mean for Stephen A? I don't think it means anything for Stephen A. Stephen A is a very transactional person who, you know, I mean, has no real loyalties. It does, I mean, at least it doesn't seem that way. So he'll find somebody else to spar with, like he always does. But what does it mean for Shannon? You know, it could be the end of his career, right? Because again, you know, this is kind of the Tony Busby playbook. You start out with one thing, and then you steadily raise the pressure over time, right? And so you have, as in the Deshaun Watson circumstance, and now, an initial reaction that's like, oh, well, you know, whatever, he's defending himself, et cetera. And then, more details and more details and more details. And it's, I mean, to me, it's got to be some level of strategy on his part, because this is twice. You know, when this first broke, it was trivial enough that Shannon could stay on the air. By Thursday, it's, will he ever be back? And I definitely think that the circumstance that was uncovered by Glasspiegel, and I'm curious, you know, where he got that information, right? Because to me, I mean, that would be something. I mean, remember, a lot of this pertains to choking, right? So that's a very interesting thing to suddenly come out. And beyond that, the 2010 accusation that I think, again, like I said, I forgot about, and a lot of people probably did, it really starts to make Shannon look like a serial offender. And so that is going to be very difficult for him to come back from. I can't see him doing the podcast. You know, I can't recall off the top of my head. Let me see here. I will be, and I'm quoting Shannon, "I am electing to step aside temporarily from my ESPN duties. I will be devoting this time to my family and responding, et cetera, et cetera. I plan to return to ESPN, yada, yada." He doesn't say anything about the podcast. I cannot imagine he's going to keep doing the podcast, right? So, I mean, but he's not ruled it out. Obviously, he'd be crazy to talk about the legal proceeding in any detail on the podcast, and that's probably the only thing people are going to be interested in hearing from him.
But the thing is, John, we're at a place now in this social media age where so many things that we should not hear about, should not know about, we're hearing about and we're learning about from sports commentators. Everybody has something to say. Stephen A. even went on his personal podcast and talked about this issue, which I did not think was wise. But I think this speaks to another issue as well, because I can't help but also consider the Pat McAfee situation, where he referenced this young Ole Miss student who faced a lot of trauma because of some internet rumors that ended up circulating. And Pat McAfee was believed to have spoken about her, even though he never mentioned her by name. And then NBC News had done some reporting where she was considering suing Pat McAfee for all of that. But it seems to be an era now where this content-driven era, this social media-driven era, man, some things do not, you can't get away with everything, is what I'm trying to say. And everything can't just be content. Everything just can't be something to talk about. These are serious, serious issues. And quite frankly, I'm a little surprised that ESPN did not say something sooner. I understand that you want to let things play out, but even if you put him on a leave, which would have been, this would have been the standard years ago. You can correct me, John, if I'm wrong, but based on the history of ESPN and based on the history of other companies, given the seriousness of the accusations made here, Shannon Sharpe would have already been sat down by ESPN if this were 10 or 15 or 20 years ago.
Well, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, but maybe not 20, you know, because I mean, I use the example in my article, Marv Albert kept doing stuff for NBC throughout his criminal legal proceeding in the 90s. And he was, you know, he was on trial and he was doing the first couple of weeks of the NFL season for them. I do think that it was only in the Me Too era that it became a norm for people who were accused to be taken off of the air or prevented from playing, like Kobe was playing throughout his, you know, he was on trial and then in the game later that night. So I do think more recently that became something that was a norm. You know, I was on, I recorded the Richard Deitch podcast earlier today, and this is before some of the details, before Shannon said he was stepping away and before the reporting by Glasspiegel. And, you know, my thought at that time was, we are in a very shameless time. And I think people are kind of looking around and saying, hey, can we get away with this? And they're realizing that they can. And so ESPN might have in 2017 said immediately, you can't be on the air. But I think things have changed even just from the Michael Irvin situation of 2 years ago. You know, I mean, things have changed pretty dramatically in the culture. And I think there's a kind of a sense of, well, let's see what we can get away with. And they were going to try to do that.
Here's the other piece that's interesting to me, because I can't help but put Stephen A. McAfee and Shannon in the same boat. What I mean by that is these are three television personalities who have become in many ways bigger than ESPN. These three men are treated as though ESPN needs them more than they need ESPN. And even when you think about Stephen A., Stephen A. has his own podcast separate from ESPN, where he feels entitled and empowered to speak about Shannon Sharpe in a way that, quite frankly, I don't think is wise or makes very much sense. But because you've got these personalities now that work with ESPN, but don't fully come under the authority of ESPN, if you get what I'm saying, it empowers these guys to go out and speak and say things and do things, because they know that there may not be the consequences from ESPN the way it would have been in the days of Keith Olbermann, the way it would have been 10 or 15 years ago. That piece is interesting to me. The question for me, though, is this: at what point does that end up really causing some serious damage? At what point does McAfee go just too far? At what point does Stephen A. go too far? At what point does Shannon Sharpe go too far? Have we reached that point? Because you've got this broadcast empowerment, I'll call it, era, where these broadcasters feel empowered to say and do anything, and anything is content. But this is a serious situation. It's not just content. It's not just a podcast topic. It's not just something on the rundown. It's not just a reel for Instagram. This is a serious, serious situation. And you've got to look at the personalities involved. You've got to look at the networks involved. And I would hope, don't know if this will be the case, but I would hope that this would be a wake-up call for the networks and for the personalities here to say, we've got to be serious about what happens with our personalities, these people that we pay, because who they are outside of ESPN can trickle into who they are inside of ESPN.
Yeah, you know, it is worth noting, this isn't something, oh, Shannon's being accused of something from 15 years ago. Yeah, this is something that he's being accused of right now. And so that does make a kind of a world of difference in terms of ESPN is doing business with someone, and this guy is supposed to be worth, you know, hundreds of millions in his podcast, and this is kind of what he's doing. Kind of seems a little odd. I mean, again, I'm not speaking to his innocence or guilt, but it's simply the simple fact of, you know, I mean, the details of this case don't indicate to me that he is living in a manner befitting someone of his stature, right? To me, if I'm ESPN, well, why am I in business with this guy? What's going on here?
That's my point, John. You just verbalized exactly what I was thinking, because my goodness, at what point? I know they bring value to the network. I know they bring eyeballs. I know that you want to be in partnerships with people whose personalities are so big that they draw millions of people every day, every week, every month. But my goodness, if you keep playing in fire here, eventually you do get burned one way or the other. And so it's something for the networks to really consider here, ESPN being at the top of the list.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the whole aspect of, you know, Undisputed being a den of iniquity, right? You have Shannon with his legal situation. You have Skip and Joy Taylor and Charlie Dixon at FS1 all being sued in relation to this hairstylist who is accusing them of misconduct. You know, obviously with Joy Taylor, it would be hostile work environment, not sexual assault. But he's accusing, you know, Skip and Charlie Dixon of sexual misconduct. And Charlie Dixon's also being sued by Julie Stewart Binks. It really seems like that whole culture at FS1, the embrace debate culture that obviously I and a lot of other people object to on aesthetic grounds and on the grounds that it is, you know, something that harms sports, it also just seems like it's a really poisonous culture generally.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. And that's a really strong observation on your part. I'm just wondering, here's the thing, John, we live in a society and a world where if you give me an inch, I'm going to take two. If you give me 2 inches, I'm going to take six. And eventually I'm going to take a foot, and then I'm going to take a mile, and then I'm going to take acres. And so if personalities, people making millions and millions of dollars, I mean, Skip Bayless was one of Fox's highest paid employees, and he was the face of FS1. Let's face it. If you are empowering these men and women and telling them how great they are and showing them how important they are, and the rules are different for them than they are for other people, it does embolden folks to see what they can get away with. And it can lead, and once again, not saying anyone's guilty or not, it can lead to misconduct. It can lead to horrible decision-making. It can lead to reprehensible behavior. And so I wonder, what does this do, if anything, going forward for the embrace debate culture? Because clearly, there seems to be enough smoke here that we've got to say, there's a fire somewhere, John.
Yeah. I mean, look, when it comes down to it, I don't think it's so surprising that something that kind of appeals to the worst angels of people's nature is the domain of people who also behave that way in their real life. I don't think, and it's assuming, of course, that all of these claims are true, which is not something that I'm assuming, right? I mean, I have no idea. But certainly it would not be unusual for something that is negative and angry and hostile and, you know, all of these various negative things that we can attribute to embrace debate. It would not be surprising if it also was a place where people who don't act well toward others in real life tend to gravitate.
One more piece of this I want to bring up. I am a bit tired of sports media people. And by people, I mean personalities, those who get paid to talk about sports on television. I am tired of sports media people talking about the personal affairs of other sports media people. I am tired of, I don't want to hear, and I'm going back to this specific example, it's not in Stephen A.'s best interest to speak about this publicly. It's not. Because all he can do is play both sides of this thing and say, let's let things play out. If he goes any further, he's getting himself in trouble one way or the other. It is not helpful. It is not beneficial for sports media personalities to come talking about this publicly and treating it as though it is something that they cover. Because the reality is, you are swimming in the same waters, and you might want to be careful, because you might say you work at this network, but there may be something going on at your network as well that just has not been uncovered by Ryan Glass-Spiegel or somebody else yet. So I would hope that wisdom would say that some of these sports media personalities who want to talk about every single thing that goes on in and around sports media involving the people on television, just be quiet. Let legal situations play out. Keep your mouth closed. Do your job, because this is not an area that's going to be beneficial for you in the short term or the long term.
Well, let's keep in mind that Stephen A. Smith does not appear to be a person who cares about anything other than what will get clicks and engagement.
Clearly.
In any respect. And so to me, obviously you're right. It is almost borderline unprofessional for him to talk about this in an informal setting like that. But he knows he could get some major clicks for it. You know, this is somebody, I mean, he brought up Kobe's death, trying to go after LeBron. I remember when Kobe died, the first game back, Portland and L.A., they were talking on ESPN. It was their studio coverage. And Stephen A. was like, oh, the Lakers better win the championship this year. And I'm like, you know, this is real life. You know, this is not First Take. You know, we are operating under an assumption that Stephen A. is like a good guy. And I don't really know one way or the other, but I know that I'm not going to make that assumption. And he's somebody who I think, you know, definitely will have no problem turning literally anything into content, regardless of how much poor taste it might be in.
And that's the piece I'm really curious about. at what point have these sports personalities, have they gone too far? Because as juicy, as salacious as something might be, sometimes you just need to keep your mouth closed. Because what you say, we saw it with McAfee, we're seeing it with Shannon Sharpe in a way. Sometimes what you say ends up getting you, as the old saying goes, you're writing a check that your mouth cannot cash. And so sometimes it is in the best interest, even if you want to talk about it, you want to go on Twitter, you want to get engagement, you want to get followers, you want to get clicks, you want to create this quote unquote safe space. It does not exist in this age. It doesn't. Keep your mouth closed. And I'm just curious, John, how does this affect how the networks want to get into business with debaters and sports media, big sports media personalities going forward? I would love to hear to a man, an ESPN executive, tell me, is this Pat McAfee thing, has it really been worth it? I would want to a man an honest conversation, not giving me PR baloney. I would want to know, has it really been worth it with all of the things that you've had to address, all of the things you've had to act like you never heard or didn't see, all of the things you have had to ignore? I know you've gotten LeBron. I know you've gotten John Cena. I know you've gotten The Rock and all of these massive personalities, these luminaries on the show, but has it really been worth it? I would really want to have those kinds of conversations with people in high and positions of power and who can make decisions for a network.
Well, in the case of McAfee, they'd say for College Game Day, it absolutely has been, right? I mean, they would say that. And beyond that, let's just, you know, let's be completely real, right? We have had a 10-year experiment on what people are willing to deal with if they think they can get away with it and succeed at their aims. And people will let anything slide if they think they can benefit from it. And you know what? There's no proof, by the way, that any of what's going on right now with Shannon Sharpe will hurt ESPN in any way, right? I mean, there's just no proof of it. First of all, I mean, you can go back and look at pretty much, like, I think a lot of why people's careers ended with Me Too was because people just thought that's what's supposed to happen. But then Louis C.K. just kept touring and won a Grammy. And you know what I noticed the other day? Charlie Rose has a show.
He sure does.
Because people like Charlie Rose. They always did.
Mm-hmm.
They still do.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
It's wild. Sometimes I say to myself, does any of it ultimately matter? Or is it just something else we'll talk about for a little while and we'll move on? But the piece of it that I don't want to go by the wayside is just to remember these are real people, real lives, real issues. And I know that in this era, this social media era, we look at everything as content. Everything needs to be real. Everything needs to be engagement. But sometimes, man, sometimes, John, real life catches up. And real life is not an Instagram reel. Real life has the decisions we make, they have real consequences. It doesn't always seem like it in this country, but they do in one form or another. Could be emotional, could be financial, could be legal, but there are consequences to the actions that we take. So let's just make wise decisions in sports media, folks. Be quiet sometimes when you're talking about people that you work in the same building with. Just be quiet.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
All right, let's go ahead and shift gears to some of the other sports media topics of the past week. And nearly a full week into the NBA playoffs, which, as anyone would have expected, because of the Easter Sunday holiday, got off to a very strong start. Nearly 7 million viewers for Game 1 of Orlando-Boston last Sunday. I mean, that's saying something. But, you know, the NBA obviously did not maximize its audience on the opening weekend, putting the Warriors game on at 9:30. And we all know the NBA's decision to feature Oklahoma City in that 1 o'clock slot. Boy, did that not go as planned. I mean, I guess it was a feature of the Thunder. I mean, everyone now knows OKC is really good, but a 51-point rout, I mean, it was 49 points at the end of three quarters. So it's not even like it was reasonable and then got out of hand. It was just out of hand from the start. Ridiculous. And, you know, it is Thursday. We're taping on Thursday. Game 3 of Oklahoma City-Memphis is on TNT tonight at 9:30. While Game 3 of the far more compelling Denver Clippers series is on NBA TV. So the NBA's decision to say, let's get Oklahoma City out in front of everybody, it's not going great so far. But if it works out in June, if people are intrigued in June, maybe. But I'll say one other thing. The number for Game 2 of that series, OKC-Memphis, is pretty low. I mean, it was about 2.2 million. That series has been much more of a lopsided than I think people would have thought. So that's kind of where the NBA is right now. Good start, but maybe some warning signs with some of these blowouts.
Yeah. John, help me and our listeners put the most watched opening weekend in 25 years piece. Can you help us put that into proper context so that we understand what that means?
Well, it means that because of out-of-home viewing generally, which is now maxed out, they're measuring in 100% of markets, so that's even higher than last year. Out-of-home viewing generally, and then Easter Sunday out-of-home viewing in particular, helped the NBA to its best average on the opening weekend since NBC and TNT in 2000. Does that mean that was the most watched opening weekend really in reality since 2000? No. It almost certainly still trailed 2011, which was slightly behind, and that was the first year LeBron was in Miami. All things being equal, that would be higher. All things being equal, there's probably a few years, so that would have been higher. But we know the way it works with Nielsen, and ultimately the numbers are what they are, the highest in 25 years with a bunch of asterisks. I actually am a little bit of the mind that this could be a subpar postseason from a ratings perspective. Because let's keep something in mind here. The only reason the NBA didn't end up where the NHL ended up, and the NHL down double digits in the regular season and down even more now in the playoffs, the NHL is having a rough year and from a ratings perspective, if you don't include four nations, and you shouldn't include four nations, it would be ridiculous too. The only reason the NBA isn't there is, one, it did backload its schedule, so it had some really good games down the stretch. But also, you know, the Luka Doncic trade helped out a lot. And, you know, the NBA also has something that hockey doesn't have, which is a ton of ABC games, relatively speaking, in the playoffs. ABC had three games. Now, that's not NBC with six on the opening weekend in 2000, but it's still, you know, three over-the-air games for the NBA, while the NHL had none. And the NBA's over-the-air presence is insufficient, but it's a heck of a lot better than what the NHL's got going. And the real point I want to make here is there's a problem with cable. There's a problem with cable viewership. And I think that's why the NHL took an especially big hit this year. I think it's why the NBA was down so much before Christmas, before ABC started its schedule. And I think that ultimately, the more you are on cable, the more vulnerable you are right now. And I think what we're going to see down the stretch of this postseason, especially, you know, who knows if Jimmy Butler will be back for the Warriors and how that series will go against Houston. The Lakers are in a dogfight with the Timberwolves. I don't think Houston-Minnesota is going to be some kind of great ratings matchup. I mean, if you get Houston-Minnesota, OKC Clippers, that's not at all what the league would need. And then in the East, you know, if you get Celtics-Knicks, that'll be a big hit, of course, you would think. But it probably will be a short series, too. And there's a pretty decent chance it'll be Celtics-Pistons instead. And then the other series would be, what, Cleveland-Indiana? This could be a really difficult rest of the playoffs for the NBA. So, great start. First round will almost certainly be up. But don't be surprised at all if the trend runs aground here starting in round two.
And as far as the competition, it's been a bit of a mixed bag. I mean, the opening weekend, you had some rough contests. I mean, OKC, Memphis, Indiana, Milwaukee was not terribly interesting. Now, things have picked up a bit. You've gotten some close games. You've gotten some, you know, quote unquote thrillers. But there was some tough action to watch. If not for that out of home boost, I do wonder what. And plus Easter weekend, I do wonder what those numbers would have looked like. I messaged you on X, and I asked you, given the number that Orlando and Boston got, could Golden State Houston have gotten 10 million viewers? It's something I do wonder about, but I'll be curious to see how the league's schedules and positions things going forward. So one thing that stood out to me was that you get the Lakers the Saturday night for the opening round, the opening weekend, and then you get Golden State. So that Saturday primetime window is something ABC has tried to boost up, and it's been fairly successful over the years since they started that package years ago. But I think it remains to be seen where we're going to be, with these playoff ratings, because something feels missing. And maybe we just need that seven-game series. Maybe we need a little bit more drama to really get things going. I also think that given some of the other things that are going on, like the NFL draft and just things that are also going on in the world politically, I wonder if any of that's having impact on ratings right now. But I do think that once we get that first really six-game, seven-game series, I'll be curious to see what we look like ratings-wise from that point going forward.
Yeah, and you know, the tell, you asked before whether it was Easter. I don't have all the household ratings from Sunday in front of me, but I do have one from Saturday. The Minnesota Lakers game one, 5.8 million viewers, up 3% from last year, but the household rating was down. And that's the out-of-home impact. I would be very curious to see those household ratings on ABC and TNT Sunday, because it was definitely, as we know, the most watched opening weekend in 25 years, but it sure as heck wasn't the highest rated. I can guarantee you that without even having to see the numbers, I can guarantee you it wasn't.
And that's going to be the trend going forward, John. The networks are going to brag about that most watched piece, but that highest rated piece, they won't talk about as much because out of home viewing and its significance is going to just be what it is going forward. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, the networks are already moving away from the household rating and to viewership, which is the reverse of when I started writing about this, when you would only ever see the rating and never see the viewership. That had been happening before out of home became, you know, a thing. But certainly since, you know, I appreciate it whenever the networks send me out of the household rating because they don't have to. Sometimes the household rating is a good story, you know. The other day during the men's national championship, you know, I thought that out of home viewing was the main reason that the audience was so good. But then the household rating was also a multi-year high. So sometimes the household rating will, you know, kind of clear you of the charges there with out of home viewing. But when it comes down to it, you know, I definitely think that for the NBA, the quality of play you mentioned before, the blowouts, I know it's gotten a little bit better. The quality of play, if 7 million people watch you, but they don't enjoy it, then what's the benefit, right? You're getting a big sampling for what? 4.5 million people watched OKC Memphis game one, and then 2.2 million watched game two. Now, I mean, you're going to drop from broadcast to cable anyway, but that wasn't just a broadcast to cable drop. You know what was really interesting about that OKC Memphis number from Tuesday night? Or whatever night it was, that OKC Memphis number, the Milwaukee Indiana game did well, relatively speaking, on NBA TV. It was 649,000, which is higher than you would expect for a Milwaukee Indiana game on NBA TV, even in the playoffs, right? That was, to me, people were saying, I'm not watching this OKC Memphis game. I'm going to watch another game. We'll see that again tonight. Don't be surprised if Denver Clippers is one of the most watched games ever on NBA TV.
And Charles Barkley even said it on Inside the NBA, was calling out TV executives or the NBA about the fact that that Clippers-Denver series, that third game was not on TNT, but is in fact on NBA TV. I'm always curious as to how those decisions are made and why one series gets the NBA TV / ESPNU treatment, which I think Milwaukee, Indiana is going to get, versus another series that is either on TNT or ESPN or ABC the entire time. That fascinates me. But yeah, Denver LA Clippers has been just sizzling. And for that series to not get that TNT slot is interesting. And I know there are some other people whose feathers are ruffled about that.
Well, I mean, the NBA's been open about it. They are trying to showcase OKC. And just so happens, OKC may be a little bit too good at this point. They are one against a 16. You know, maybe you showcase them in round two, or maybe showcase them in the regular season. I know they got a lot of flex games. OKC got so many flex games that they went over the limit. And so their last few had to be blacked out locally. That's something that only happens to the Lakers and the Warriors. So the NBA flexed on OKC a lot. But ultimately, you know, the showcasing here in the first round has been a mistake.
I agree. And that's exactly what I was about to say. You wait to that second round series, which will have more juice. It'll have more intrigue. It should be more competitive because you should be playing a better team. But I would wait until the second round to really get OKC out there. But the first round, with what you have, the players involved, the teams involved, I think it's a bit of a mistake to sort of force feed Oklahoma City down the throats of hardcore and casual fans. I definitely agree with you on that.
Yeah. All right. So that's the NBA situation. We did touch a little bit on hockey, and obviously the viewership for hockey has been rough. It's actually been a pretty poor season for the NHL across the board, and Four Nations was the exception. But a lot of people kind of use Four Nations as kind of a, you know, an argument that the NHL was doing a little bit better or a lot better than it actually was. That's, you know, that's an international competition. It'd be like saying that the Olympics for the NBA, you know, were an indication of the NBA's popularity. And obviously, I don't think that would be an accurate statement. All right, let's go ahead and shift here to a sad story this week. That would be the passing of longtime ESPN play-by-play voice Mike Patrick. And this is the voice of Sunday Night Football. Really, to this day, No one has called more seasons of Sunday Night Football than Mike Patrick, working most of those years with Joe Theismann and toward the end with Paul McGuire. You know, Armand, I always turn to you in these situations because you have such a great insight on announcers and their craft. So your thoughts on Mike Patrick's career and legacy.
So Mike Patrick is first and foremost known as the voice of Sunday Night Football. He also did the College World Series. I remember him doing quite a few of those with Harold Reynolds back in the day. Also, you think about him doing the Women's Final Four. He worked with Ann Myers for quite some time and then ended up working with Doris Burke before she ended up moving over to the NBA. But my favorite Mike Patrick assignments were when he did ACC college basketball. Growing up in the Carolinas, as I did, I grew up in the era where you had Raycom and you had ESPN doing the Duke Carolina game at the same time. You'd have Raycom Jefferson Pilot Sports doing Duke Carolina. It'd be Tim Brando and Billy Packer, maybe. And then you had ESPN2 on the blackout doing the Duke Carolina game with Mike Patrick and Dick Vitale. And I used to get so disappointed when I didn't get the Patrick Vitale call because it just felt like something big and something special and something important to me. Of course, Mike Patrick had that unfortunate slip of the tongue where he brought up the Britney Spears moment during the Georgia-Alabama game in 2007, I believe it was, with Todd Blackledge. But Mike was just solid. He was a solid broadcaster. He sort of faded away from ESPN quietly. And I thought that was, I didn't think that was fair given how much he had meant to the network. He was their first NFL voice, my goodness, for almost 20 years. So I thought he should have gotten better treatment on his way out. But one of their anchors, if you think about it, I mean, going back to the days when ESPN was not nearly as respected for the quality of their productions. Going back to the 80s when ESPN was still figuring things out, they trusted Mike Patrick with Sunday Night Football, and he delivered and was consistent, was consistently good, didn't have a lot of catchphrases. He had his holy cow and his it's great to have you with us. That's all he really had, but just solid, just a solid broadcaster. And I was thinking about the fact that just all of these major voices connected with college football, because Mike did college football for many years after his Sunday Night Football days. Gary Danielson about to retire, Lee Corso about to retire, Mike Patrick passing away. So you have this major shift with the voices that we have known for many years and many decades connected with ESPN. But Mike was just solid. He was just solid. Even his days with Lynn Elmore doing the American Conference, his many years with Dick Vitale, that's where I know him the most. So just Godspeed to just a really good broadcast. And from everything that's been said by Holly Rowe and Todd Blackledge and some of his other former partners, good guy too.
And, you know, that's no guarantee, right? Who did Holly Rowe work with back in the day? The late, great Ron Franklin. And I say the late, great because he was great, but he wasn't always great to work with, as Holly certainly knows.
And Janine Edwards, too.
And
Ron did not get a send-off from ESPN. He did not.
He got cast off from ESPN.
Yes, he did. Really a moment just to pause and think about where ESPN has come from and to think about the kind of contributor Mike Patrick was, a versatile broadcaster who did all of the major sports except for hockey. But just a really good broadcaster. That's what I'm going to remember about Mike Patrick.
Yeah, you know, it's an entire generation of broadcasters now, 80 and above. You know, I saw Marv Albert at the Knicks game the other day on TNT. You know, he's about to turn 84. You know, there are folks you don't even think about whose names you might not remember. Gary Thorne and Bill Clement. You know, I mean, just so many of the people who made up the fabric of this industry in those years. Dick Stockton, you know. People work so late into their lives now that post-retirement period, they might be working a game 1 year and within short order, they are, you know, 85, 86 years old.
There's something still to be said about just doing the work well, not for excessive attention, not to get clicks. There's something to be said about doing the job well, about being prepared, about knowing when to raise your voice, about knowing how to weave in stories, about knowing how to have good chemistry, about knowing how to be sort of the anchor of a broadcast, to ad lib for 3 hours and not have a script. There's something to be said about that. And it could, you could trust a broadcast with Mike Patrick. You could trust a championship broadcast with Mike Patrick. And I think that says the most about the kind of broadcaster, the kind of play-by-play announcer he was.
All right. Before we go today, let's talk quickly about the Rose Bowl. And this is an interesting story. All the years of intractability from the Rose Bowl organizers, they have finally decided, or agreed, I should say, to move up the start of the Rose Bowl from 5 to 4 o'clock Eastern, which will allow the Sugar Bowl to kick off at a more reasonable time, 8 o'clock rather than 8:50. But it will also mean that the Rose Bowl could very well end before that famous sunset against the San Gabriel Mountains that they love to show off. Now, the Rose Bowl this year, the 4 o'clock start, if it ends at the same time that this past year's Rose Bowl ended, then it will end before the sun sets. The sun sets at around 7:50 something, and the Rose Bowl this year ended at 8:30. So if you subtract a half, if you subtract an hour, but I will say, the sun set. That's kind of when the sun's gone, right? So the sun will at least be setting. So that red sky they love should be there, which I guess is really all they're looking for.
So how many years have we been talking about the stubbornness of the Rose Bowl and those who run it? Because it really has been the obstacle, because they didn't want to move it off January 1st. That was a thing for a while. And then, of course, the start time has been an issue as well. And I'm out here on the East Coast. And I'll tell you straight up, it's really hard to watch a 3 hour, 45 minute Sugar Bowl that starts at 9 o'clock and could go to overtime. I mean, it's hard to do. So I love the quote from a college football playoff executive director, Rich Clark, who said it was, quote, thoughtful collaboration between ESPN, the CFP, and the New Year's Day Bowls. I would love to be in that conversation to know how thoughtful that collaboration actually was. But good. I mean, one thing is clear in college football, tradition is gone. And as much as we want to hold on to it, as much as we want to treasure and cherish those iconic shots that we get every year, it's a new day. You got a 12-team playoff, right? And there's push for more teams. BCS is gone. 14 playoff era is gone. We got semifinal games and quarterfinal games all over the place. Tradition is gone. And so the Rose Bowl has to make the adjustment. And I think it's the right move given where we are in this era.
Yeah. And, you know, the real surprise to me, why was the Rose Bowl so intractable to begin with? I mean, you go back to the BCS and they were totally off of New Year's Day for a couple of those years when they would host a national title game. The Fiesta Bowl was in that slot those two times. So I've never really understood how the Rose Bowl suddenly became locked into, we got to be on New Year's, we got to be at 5 o'clock. When if you go back to 2002 and 2006, they were on January 2nd, January 3rd, January 4th. I never understood it.
They must think they're the masters, huh? We determine the terms for everything. But yeah, I mean, this was a necessary thing. This is a necessary decision to make, because as we know, and people say it all the time, sometimes they say it so much that it sort of wears on my nerves. College football playoff, it's a television product. That's why you have those stupid Tuesday night TV shows where they release the rankings like it's some big thing. It is all about television. ESPN runs this thing. It's one of the things they do best. college football and specifically the college football playoff. And so with television, it is amazing, John. It is amazing what television can do and how television can impact decisions that are made all over the place. And the Rose Bowl and the college football playoff is no different.
Well, television, I mean, we're living in that world. Television gave us everything we've got here in 2025 for better and a lot.
Thanks,
worse,
television.
For certain. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. That's going to do it for the Sports Media Watch podcast this week. Thanks, as always, to Armand for joining me. And thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be back with more stuff down the line.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tontandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.